Hello everyone, I'm Liam, and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show, exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us out. In exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard, one at a time, until I've covered all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. All right, let's get started. This week we're looking at element 1.3.3, information for families. It's part of Quality Area 1, Educational Program and Practice, and it's the third and final element of Standard 1.3, Assessment and Planning. The description for this element is, families are informed about the program and their child's progress. All right, so what's this one all about? This one is pretty straightforward. We're talking about here that we know that children learn best when educators and families work together, when services and the child's parents, or the important people in their lives, come together with goals for children, working on them so children can succeed. It's also about ensuring that families have a say in their child's learning and that we actually explain the principles and why early education is so important. And this is really about, you know, putting the families in the picture in regards to what we do in our services, and particularly around what we do in Quality Area 1, so program practice, assessment and planning. All right, so what does this one look like in practice? Again, we sort of said this a lot throughout Quality Area 1, we really need to start by thinking about the community of children, families and educators that are with us. And this is something, you know, particularly can affect in terms of service sizes. So for really, you know, small services, 20, 30 children, we'll have a really different process for this, for something with, you know, 180 or getting up to 200 children. Yes, there are services getting that big. So we really want to think about processes that support that mean that are manageable. So when I say things like, you know, that every family, you know, gets a particular individual approach, that's obviously going to look different in different services. But what we should be seeing in services that do this well, no matter their size, is that there is a clear system and a process for what's collected, what information we collect about children, and how that's shared with families. It's really important, you know, for services that do this well. They don't just share the content. So it's not about saying, you know, this is what we did today, this is maybe the daily diary, or this is what we've done. They actually focus more on sharing how and why the content is in place. So not just sharing the content, sharing why we do the content. And that can be done in a variety of ways. We might see things like curriculum nights. These are really great, where families come in after closing hours and spend some time with team leaders and the centre director, the educational leader, if that's a different role for you. And there's an opportunity, you know, away from the busyness of a normal day to actually talk and go through what you're doing. That's a really important way to share that information with families. But again, that's a really important concept if we can separate those ideas of sharing the content from why we do it. Why we do it is just as important. I'd probably argue it's even more important because the content is kind of useless to families without that context. Another thing you might see are maybe packs of information for families. So on orientation or on arrival, or as children move into new rooms, they might get some information about this is how we program in this room. If we think back to some of the previous elements in Quality Area 1, where I sort of tried to talk about thinking less about the individual pieces of documentation, but your overall approach, this is what we should be sharing with families, and then showing them where individual pieces of documentation might sit and fall in with that. So in practice, you know, we would see really clear and simple processes for sharing that information about the program with families. The other thing we see, there would be multiple ways of sharing. This is a really important one. And anyone who's worked in the sector, you know, understands this, that all families are really different. Some have lots of time. There are some families who will talk your ear off for, you know, an hour about, you know, what's going on in the centre with their child. And there's just some families that don't want to engage, that don't want to be spending a lot of time talking about what's going on. They're happy enough with what's happening for their child. They maybe trust you to do it really well, but they're just not interested in talking. And that's, you know, that's how it is, and that's always how it's going to be. So we need to acknowledge and work around that. in terms of those multiple ways of sharing, it is really important to prioritize, you know, the face-to-face verbal communication with families. That's always going to be a challenge, you know, in busy rooms. Maybe you do family grouping in the morning and afternoon and there's less educators available, and maybe some of those educators might not have been with that child all the day. But finding ways for that to work for your service, you know, maybe leaving notes for educators to share. But, you know, assuming there's an educator there who knows that child well, you know, really prioritizing and finding time for that conversation to take place. And a strategy I always suggest is, even when it is really busy, it's just saying to the family, oh, you know, I'd really like to share some of what's been happening. You know, can you wait 5 minutes? I'm just dealing, you know, with this particular situation. I'm working with this child and this family. It'd be great if you can just hang out for 5 minutes, have a cup of tea or whatever, and really, you know, make time for that one. The other thing is making appointments as well. It's just saying, you know, family, it'd be great, can you come in for 15 minutes, or when you drop them off tomorrow, can you stay 15 minutes afterwards, and I'll make sure I'm available to do that. Face-to-face is always going to be the best way to doing that. We can talk, we can answer questions directly, and then we can take really quick notes about some of those conversations, which is useful for other things as well. We do, of course, also do a lot of writing. The thing we do quite a lot on Northside is using our emails with families for more regular updates, maybe even weekly or fortnightly. It's much easier than putting together, you know, those old kind of newsletters we might have a Word template for or a Microsoft Publisher template for, and we spend, you know, maybe doing a lot of time doing a monthly update and an update from each room. I'm a big fan of doing a bit less, more often. So maybe, you know, a really quick email update with a bit from, you know, one or two rooms, or from all the rooms, but, you know, achievable things where we can see what's happening in those classrooms. And that's great because that really builds up for families. So they're getting something quite regularly, maybe with a photo, you know, involved as well. But they're getting a sense of what the flow of that room is over a long period of time. You know, those monthly updates are often, you know, they're very focused on summarizing what's been going on. They might pick out one big project that's being worked on. Those emails, you know, can be quickly and easily put together. They can be sent out by the center director. And, you know, in my mind, they're easier than putting together those, you know, big old newsletters, which take a bit of time. The other thing to think about is, you know, how are those emails out, or newsletters if you're doing them, how are they sharing what we were talking about before, why we do particular styles of documentation, but also what are we prioritizing, what are we choosing to focus on? I'd be thinking, you know, particularly focusing on the early years learning framework, sharing those ideas with families, but focusing on things like group projects and events. What can we demonstrate that's been going on, you know, more than just the day-to-day? Those planned projects, or the spontaneous ones that are built up and we've planned around them, that demonstrate how we engage with learning with children. And those sort of things are great to share with families, and you can come back to them. So like I said, if you're doing that weekly, fortnightly thing, you can check in with particular projects, and families can, you know, as a parent myself, you're inclined to think that your child is, you know, the most special child in the service, and you're probably most concerned about what they're individually doing. But, you know, for families, it's a good idea of seeing how the group works and why that group context is so important for children. The other thing, you know, in practice, and this is called out in the Guide to the National Quality Standard, is what we call summative assessments. So it's a point-in-time reflections of where children are at. So that's about stopping at particular points in time, maybe once every quarter, once every 3 months, once every 4 months, once every 6 months, maybe even once a year, where you stop and you assess where children are at particular things. And in the context we work in, with the early years learning framework, and My Time, My Place for school age care, you know, we're really focusing on the journey towards those learning outcomes. You know, I've referred to this this approach in one of the previous elements, and it is really one of the best strategies I can give to people, is really pull back the focus on, you know, lots and lots of documentation on an ongoing basis, and really focus on those summative assessments. They're great ways of articulating for educators where the children they're working at are, and helps you set goals. But they're also great for families. Families then become might not be necessarily as familiar with the early years learning framework, but they probably remember, you know, getting a term report and those kind of things. And I'm not suggesting these need to be like term reports, but they're pretty used to getting a summative assessment of some kind. And if we focus just on the early years learning framework, so we focus on, you know, how is this child's sense of identity? How are they moving towards that goal of effective communication? We're supporting families to learn the language of the early years learning framework, which helps us in our work down the track. But it also enables us to distill what's important, what's happening for that child. And they don't need to be long. They don't need to be massive. You know, we focus on try to one to two pages for the children I work with in Northside, but they're a really great tool for supporting understanding of children's learning and why the early years learning framework is so important. So that's a really good thing I'd get services and people to look at if you're not already. But this can be also be done in a variety of ways. We can see things like that through learning stories or summaries of children's learning. They might be called different things, but they're a great way of sharing the how you do. That's a great content sharing piece for services, but they can also give them an overview of how you program and how you document. All right, suggestions for nominated supervisors. I've got a couple of points here. An overall point is to just really think about the children and the and particularly the families you work with. You might be living in a rural, remote area where those community connections are already really quite strong, and you probably know a lot of the families even outside of the service. For ones who are in the middle of, a metro city where those connections are harder to maintain. Think about what's going to work for your families, what particular strategies. But the first proper suggestion is, really start this from the start. This is another bit of advice that we're going to be hearing a lot of throughout the whole of this Exploring the NQS series, right up to Quality Area 7, is really start, the best place to start is at the start. So for families, that orientation phase, even going on the waiting list, I would really recommend it. Be talking about why you do what you do. When I talk with educators and services about this particular challenge, about developing partnerships with families and getting them to take an interest in the program, the biggest challenge we kind of face is that we're not necessarily upfront about why we do what we do, and families can get a bit annoyed if they're not getting things that maybe their friend is seeing, and that that my friend gets a photo every day of my child, and why don't I? Because we haven't explained to families why we do a particular thing. So no matter what approach you take. Be really direct and confident and upfront with families. Explain it so families know what they're signing up for. They're less likely to be worried or stressed they're not getting things if they understand right from the start that this is the way we do things. That's a big challenge for us. And also, we have a really specific approach to documentation, programming, and planning that's quite different. Quite small amounts of documentation, but they're very heavily focused on summative assessments and the early years learning framework. We don't use any online documentation at all, but we explain that really clearly to families, so they're making the choice to join us knowing the way we do what we do. So being confident and talking to families, this is the way we do it. This is why you don't get this. This is why we prioritize this. That's one of the most important things, I think, for nominated supervisors is be direct and be upfront and do that right at the start of that relationship with the family. The other bit of advice is one I actually gave every middle center director not that long ago, which is don't beat yourself up if families don't want to contribute. It's probably one of the most common things we hear is that families won't write feedback on the thing, or they won't comment on XYZ, and that's always going to be the case. And what I tell educators and nominated supervisors particularly is you need to remember that all you can do is provide the opportunity to contribute. We can't handcuff families to the desk and put a pen in their hand and get them to document that. We can't do that, obviously. So all we can do is provide as much opportunity as we can. And if families don't want to contribute, that's their choice. Don't beat yourself up about it, and don't devote so much of your time to trying to crack that. There's so much more important things you could be doing. But as long as you know in yourself, you've given them every opportunity to contribute, you've sent emails, you've provided, really quick opportunities for comment in a box or lots of other creative ways you can think of. That's all you need to do. And that's that about meeting this element of the National Quality Standards, providing those opportunities. You can't force families to contribute. So the advice here is go easy on yourselves if this is something you're struggling with, and just see if there's slightly different things you can do to encourage that contribution. With the quality improvement plan, I would really be focusing on that idea of summative assessment. So one of the points here for that quality improvement plan would be each family will receive a summative assessment periodically outlining their children's progress against the learning outcomes. That's a really great way of sharing directly that information with families. They can be printed and given to families, or they can be emailed out. There's a variety of ways you could do that. But that's a really, having set points in time where you provide that information to families at a really high level about their child's learning is really important. And then the other one I would go with is our approach to assessment planning and documentation is shared with all families at the start of their enrollment experience. So that's really about saying what I was talking about with the suggestion for the nominated supervisor is make sure we're giving information to families about the way we do things and why we do it, not just the content of what we do. Here's why we do it, and refreshing that knowledge at different ways. All right, that's it for another week. We've now officially wrapped up Quality Area 1. We're 9 elements down. And, you know, that's one of the trickiest ones, I think, for services is now sort of is sort of wrapped up. I hope it's been useful for people. As I said to a couple of these, it's been really hard to get these done in 15 minutes. Make sure, you know, I hope you're going back and sharing some with your team and really thinking about different ways you can approach these elements. But we really appreciate your support. And we'll be back next week, beginning Quality Area 2, Children's Health and Safety. So thanks to everyone who stuck with us throughout the first 9 elements. I can also ask if you can share out this podcast. It'd be great to get some more listeners and obviously some more support for the podcast. But if you're finding it useful, you know, share it out, post it on Facebook, post it on all the social media things you look at, or email it to a colleague. The more people hear this, the happier I am. So until we're back next week with the beginning of Quality Area 2, it's goodbye from me.